At long last, we are finally back. This is episode number 49 of From the Braves Booth. Alongside Joe Simpson and our producer-engineer Jonathan Chadwick, Ben Ingram here with you, and this is our first show of the brand new season. So we're all glad to be back. We're about a week and a half or so into the season. We've got spring training behind us. We've got opening day behind us. The home opener was last night as we're recording this. And, Joe, people have been asking for weeks and weeks and weeks, are you guys going to bring the podcast back? The answer is yes. So good to have this format back again.
100%. I've been looking forward to it. And my answer to that would be, by all means, we're going to do the podcast, but we kind of need a few things to talk about. We need some subject matter away from just how many guys are going to go on the spring training trip to Clearwater, you know?
And how riveting.
Yeah, and do you think this guy is going to have a chance to make the team because he's been on 8 road trips so far? Those types of conversations I don't think are all that scintillating, but now we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, we do. Some good, some bad, unfortunately. I want to throw our email address out there, bravesbooth@gmail.com. Any questions that you may have, you can fire away. It doesn't have to be the day of an episode or anything like that. If something comes to your mind and you want to shoot it to us, we'll get it. bravesbooth@gmail.com. And if it passes through the gatekeeper, Jonathan, then it'll make it down to our desk. So we've got several pages full of great questions we'll get into a little bit later. But lots of places we could start right now. Let's start with the good news. It was good to see this place slammed last night. Over 40,000, a sellout crowd, another walk-off win. We've come to expect those now. I mean, this team could be down 2-3 runs late, and you expect them to do what they did last night, and once again they did it.
Yeah, and I think our fans are ready for that too. They were standing from the 8th or 9th inning on, knowing that something and anticipating that something was about to happen, and it did again. And there were a lot of key contributors. It wasn't just Travis's game-winning hit. It was all the good work in the 8th and 9th inning by guys too that kind of set all that up. So it was fun to watch. It is great to be back at Truist Park, and it was great to hear the crowd.
Yeah, it was so good to be back home. We can't state that enough. This place has become so special. I mean, this is the 8th season of this ballpark, and to see what we see every single night, and we throw heap and praise on fans all the time and about how amazing this place has become, because it could be a random Tuesday night in the middle of June, and this place is 40,000 strong. And an atmosphere has really been created here. And when we go to other ballparks, we know that when we're sitting here, but when we go to other ballparks, you really miss home even more, because you know once you get back home, it's not just home. You know the environment, you know the atmosphere that this place is. And I miss it when we're away.
You know, walking over here this afternoon, one of the things that struck me when I saw so many people in their Braves gear, moms, dads, certainly the kids, grandparents, you know, I saw what appeared to be part of a little league team. They all had on their Atlanta caps, but had their gloves. They couldn't wait to get in the ballpark and watch the game tonight. But there's an atmosphere you're talking about that I think has been created by the Battery too, where it's an all day affair. Everybody wants to come early and stay late and watch the Braves play. And for that, I don't think there's anything quite like it. To date, there's a lot of other teams that are looking at the Battery, maybe with a new construction of their new stadium, let's say, and maybe wanting to copy it. But what the team and the organization has done with the Battery to have this set up for a game, I think is just fabulous, because by the time everybody gets in the stadium, they're at a frenzy.
Yeah, they are.
And then they can't wait to see their guys.
And that starts with winning, too. I mean, the mm-hmm. Battery is amazing. The facility is amazing. And then you couple that with the product on the field. 6 straight division titles and amongst the best in baseball in that time, a World Series title. You know that you'll have all day in the Battery, and then you come into this ballpark, and you're going to see maybe the best team in baseball, mm-hmm. night in, night out there for 9 innings and doing their thing. And it's Michael, and it's Ronald, and it's Ozzy, and Matt, and Austin, and Spencer, it's Max, the list goes on and on of superstars. So to me, it all climaxes once you come in and they say play ball.
Yeah, and the organization's doing a fabulous job of enhancing the total experience inside the ballpark. They're constantly revamping. They're constantly adding to. There's a project going on right now just above and to the right of the Chop House. I know that just to keep up with all of the demand, they've had to rearrange, redo the clubhouse store to accommodate everybody. Yesterday when I was walking in a little bit later, I walked by the Thread Shop and Baseballism over there on Battery Avenue, and there were people crowded around the doors. They couldn't wait to get in, and they had to limit, you know, and let people leave before they let more people come in. So they're constantly trying to improve all that experience to make it easier for fans too. It's just a great place to come, and the winning is a major part of it, but the whole experience is also adds to it.
Yeah, it's like a little town over here, Bravestown, USA.
Yeah, it's true. Braves country is this town.
Yeah, it is. It is. Let's get to Spencer Strider, and we can only speculate, and I'm not even going to do that. We just know that Spencer will have an MRI today. Last night he was out there making his second start of the season, and you and I commented how the fastball just didn't look as crisp as it normally is. He's usually 97, 98, 99. Last night he was 93 to 95. A lot of contact there in the first inning, able to gut his way through the four innings that he was out there, but we just knew he didn't look to be himself. And then we find out after the ball game that he will have an MRI today. So by the time most of you listen to this podcast, we'll know the result of it. But as we record this, we have no idea. But anytime a pitcher has to go in for an MRI, that typically spells bad news, doesn't it?
Well, not always. Most of the time, yes, or he wouldn't be in there. But sometimes it also eliminates what you think it might be. Mm-hmm. You know, it might, maybe it's the only good news would be, well, this tendon isn't torn, or this hamstring isn't torn, or something like that, or a break. Maybe it just eliminates that from the consideration, and then you treat whatever it might actually be. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it's nothing serious, and that maybe it's something that will be temporary. You're right. There was a difference in Spencer last night in a couple of different ways. Obviously, the velocity was off, especially the last two innings. What I also noticed was a lot of sliders. Now, if you got a sore elbow, sometimes the slider's not what you want to throw, but maybe he just didn't have any confidence in cutting his fastball loose the way they were getting swings at it. So he was trying to get him to swing at something else, hence a walked-in run. You know, he doesn't usually do that, especially on a slider. Mm-hmm. He's going to come right after you with his best gas and say, here, see what you can do with this. And he was unable to do that, or did not do that last night, because he was uncomfortable. So all those things kind of were red flags that popped up for me.
You go back to spring training, and there was the 48-hour period or so where we were fearful for Ronald Acuna. Mm-hmm. And turns out everything was okay there, and you hope for the same with Spencer. Hopefully just irritation.
Yeah.
And maybe they say, you know what, let's just sideline him for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, reevaluate, and he's strong after that. That's what our hope is. But when he talks about elbow irritation, hopefully that's the extent of it, and that MRI, like you said, eliminates worse things that it could potentially be.
Yeah, and he's had Tommy John before when he was at Clemson, so he's been through that before. He knows in his own mind what that's like when that thing breaks down. And if nothing else, I'm just glad he didn't try to keep pushing forward, that whoever he told or suggested to them that he wasn't right, they immediately made a pitching change. So I'm glad it didn't. Because he's such a tough competitor, he didn't just go back out there and force it.
Yeah. I've heard some theories from people who wonder if adding a curveball added extra stress on the elbow. I don't particularly believe that. And the reason I say that is I've spoken with lots of pitchers who have had Tommy John, pitchers who know their arms and the anatomy of the arm and things like that. And I had a good conversation with Darren about this during spring training, and he said it's not secondary pitches that really lead to Tommy John. A lot of times, throwing the fastball as hard as you can be just as detrimental to the elbow as anything else. But really what they have drilled in on, where you really have to grip a ball hard, a hard grip on a pitch, a hard grip with your hand in order to force a spin or a fastball in this case just to stay up, that is what can really beat down an elbow. So I don't know that it's one particular pitch. I think it's just one pitching. I mean, you think about the natural arm angle that you have. Pitching is not the natural arm angle. Your arm moves underneath.
Yeah, right.
So anytime you're throwing overhand and throwing as hard as you can, that's going to lead to stress on tendons and ligaments and muscles and things like that. So I don't think you can point to one specific pitch and say, well, if he hadn't added this curveball, then he wouldn't have these elbow issues.
No, well, that'll be out there, though.
Yeah.
You know, if it is any kind of injury that waylays him for a while, I think that's probably where everybody's going to go. But don't you think that this may have cropped up in spring training if it was a curveball alone?
Mm-hmm.
I do. I think if he started throwing that in his third or fourth start in spring training, he said, well, this doesn't feel right, that he would have said, I'm going to go away from it and come back to it another time. I choose to believe that it's not the curveball that caused this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you got a guy who throws 100.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of wear and tear on an elbow.
Have you ever seen a slow motion follow through of what happens to the arm on a throw?
Yeah.
It
pronate.
It does. The palm of your hand turns out away from the path of where the ball is going, and it's almost kind of gross what the arm does in the follow through once you release it. And it's amazing to me that there aren't more injuries as if there aren't enough.
Was it you he was telling me about? Was it Carl Hubble?
Yeah.
And his arm would naturally pronate towards the end of his life because he threw so many screwballs?
Screwballs. He turned the ball over the opposite direction of a curveball on the spin, and that the rest of his life he just walked with his palm facing out away from him. And not because he wanted to, but that's just what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Don showing me one time how much longer his right arm was than his left arm. And he says, I promise you, I'm not pushing my shoulder down. He felt like his right arm, with all the thousands and thousands and thousands of pitches, would hang lower than the left arm does. And I say all that just to say, you think about doing this for years and years and years and years and years, and that side of your body is going to be visibly changed from the other side of your body.
Right. No, and with the extension your arm, the way that you use your arm when you pitch, that extension, you would expect those muscles around the shoulder and up the traps, even there, they would be stretched out and extended.
Yeah, it would be. Definitely would be. So those are really some of the bullet points as we come to work today here on the 6th of April. But
I wish we had an update on Sean Murphy, too. Mm-hmm. I know people have been asking about that. To me, that injury is one of those that is a precaution. Depending on how severe it is, and they did an MRI on him, it's one of those deals that you just really you wait to let it heal, and then you wait a little longer to make sure you don't re-injure it. So let's hope that we get him back out there before the end of the month.
Yeah, I don't know. But outside of if you're talking about nagging injuries, to me, oblique groin and hamstring are at the top of the list for me because you can feel good. The pain can be gone. You can stretch out, then you get back out there, and boom, it happens again.
Yeah, game conditions.
Yeah. And that's what you worry about for Murph, because if you put yourself in his shoes and you get a fat pitch you want to rip, and let's say you don't catch it clean, it's going to be in your mind your first or second or even 10th big swing. Is that going to grab me again? It's going to be in your mind.
That and throwing. You know, if he's got to catch and throw to try to catch a base stealer, the torque you put on his left side to get ready to throw a ball with that kind of effort to second base, that's putting a little strain because that will tighten up as you're twisting the trunk of your body to get your arm in the right position. So all of that has to be paid attention to make sure that it doesn't reoccur.
Yeah, and if you think about it, when it comes to all your power, whether it be hitting or throwing, like you say, it's coming from right there.
Yeah.
Such a stress on that part of the body. For anybody, but especially him, and hopefully get to see him really soon, and we'll just reevaluate. I know. I'm right there with you. See how you feel. Okay, you feel 100%. Let's give it some more time.
Yeah, that was the old Bobby Cox theory. He's ready. Okay, he gets another day.
Yeah. Altogether, I'd say a very successful road trip to begin the season. Anytime you take 2 out of 3 at Philadelphia, that's something to celebrate. And then in the midst of some of the coldest weather, hopefully the coldest we'll see all year, you go up there and split with Chicago. And the next time we go up there, it'll be very nice weather in June.
Yeah,
that'll be
right.
Much better. It was so nasty, folks. The day that we were rained out, I say rained out, take your pick, rain, freezing rain, sleet, snow. We saw it all that day, fog.
Uh-huh.
I think everything but locusts took place in Chicago
right.
That day.
Yeah, it was awful. And I said last night on the air, I couldn't believe the Cubs played that night. I contacted my old partner, John Shambi, who works for the Cubs now, and I said, are you guys really going to play? And he said, it's Siberia over here. That's the way he described it. And yet they did play and got nine innings in, and they played pretty much through the rain. But I don't know how they did it. We couldn't have done it at Comiskey, at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Comiskey sounds so much better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
You got to find a way to get back in there.
Yeah.
Guaranteed Rate fits too much. Speaking of our time at Guaranteed Rate Field, and we have lots of questions in our pile today about early season scheduling by the league. And it's a question that we have as well. I thought that you and I had a pretty interesting conversation with Lynn Casper, who does radio for the White Sox. And we were talking about the early season scheduling. And, of course, over the last now two seasons, this year and last year, we have the balanced schedule, so which we love. I mean, it's great to see everybody.
Yep.
And I think it's good for fans to get to see everybody come to their town at least every other year. But he told us that he had had a conversation where he understands that the league is looking at these first 2 years and seeing what the hiccups are, the bumps in the road, and he expects there to be some kind of a change for next year where maybe they iron some of this out. Now, I still think you're going to have scheduling snafus, but it's just a head-scratcher to me to start the season in places like Chicago and Cleveland and Philadelphia and Denver when we don't have to.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I mean, you can't open the season in all of the dome stadiums and the southern teams every year.
Right.
You just can't. It's got to be switched up a little bit. But to think that you have to play in Minneapolis or Detroit, along with those other teams you mentioned, who do not have dome stadiums, you can do that. But you got to have common sense. And I don't think the schedule makers or the commissioner's office, whoever approves it, has any in this regard. If you're going to play in those cities, play a team within your division,
right,
or certainly within your league, not outside. It makes it so much easier to go back and do the makeup games if you have to do that, as opposed to us, like in Chicago, playing somebody outside our league, our only trip of the year in there. Chances were real good at the 1st of April that we were going to have bad weather in Chicago, and we did, and it puts a hardship on the team to have to go back and make up whatever you lose.
Mm-hmm. I have no problem starting in Philly. That's fine.
Yeah, I didn't either.
If we'd had weather there, okay, we go back there in August, we'll make it up then.
Right.
But for Chicago, now we lose an off day in June. And so once that New York-St. Louis trip comes to an end, instead of flying home for an off day, we'll go to Chicago for one day and then come home. And all that could be avoided if you just didn't play teams outside of your division in their place in April.
I was looking, I don't think Toronto's played a home game yet.
That's wild.
Yeah, I have to double check that, but I think that's right.
Got a dome and everything.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we have some adjustments made with the scheduling last year, and maybe it's something that makes a lot more sense for everybody, all 30 teams across the board.
Toronto has played at home. No, wait. Toronto has not played at home. Neither has Boston. And neither has Cleveland. Okay, well, that makes sense. Cleveland and Boston, neither one have played at home. That's smart.
Yeah.
Boston may not think it's smart. They've been on the road, a three-city road trip to start the season. But it's all out west.
Yeah.
And
they won't have to go back.
They've played them all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. See, we were in Chicago. They had Detroit in town right before that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You're never going to see the Tigers again.
Yeah.
But to have to go back to a place that you were not scheduled to go to, that's when it gets kind of challenging.
Yeah, and it really only applies to like the first 2 weeks of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Surely they can figure that out.
Right. Anything before April the 15th.
Unless the league office decides to start playing in the 10th of March.
Right.
You know, we just keep moving it back.
And that's the whole reason. They've squeezed in an extra round of playoffs for monetary purposes and eyeballs, if you ask me, more than anything.
Right.
And at the paying the price on that, all of us at the beginning of the season, starting probably 7-8 days before we normally would.
Exactly.
So that's the issue that we run with adding another round of the postseason. Anything else you want to touch on before we dive into these questions?
You mean like when I become commissioner?
When you become commissioner, this thing's just going to run like you know what through a goose.
Yeah, right. It'll be very WD-40-like.
We'll have great uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Everything will fit.
Yeah, yeah, they'll fit. They'll look the right color. They'll be everything that they're supposed to be. Anyway, we're not going to go there. We only have an hour.
Yeah, right. We've been encouraged to stay away from the uniform topic, yeah. So you understand how we feel. But I know Jay Chad's going to jump in with us, so we've got a bunch of really good questions. And speaking of a timely question, let me start with this one from Chris. How much are you all looking forward to next road trip with two dome stadiums? Well, Chris, here's the thing. I think we kind of perfected the cold weather look. I mean, we layered up properly. I think we all felt pretty good, especially Jay Chad. He had the toboggan on. He had gloves. He was ready. So given the elements, I think we passed the test for three Southern boys.
I think so, too. Did you stay warm up there in your perch, JC?
I stayed very warm. I think the people that are probably looking forward to it the most were the people that handle our luggage and load it on the plane and things of that nature, because my bag probably weighed about 200 pounds.
Well, you guys, you know, we didn't – some people have gotten back to us about this, but you guys packed to leave from here to go to spring training – then for a week on the road in the regular season. So that's a wild, long schedule that encompasses a lot of different weather changes. No wonder it weighed so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the first things I did in mid-February when I was packing to leave to go to Florida, after I got everything together for Florida, it was like, okay, we're going to two cold weather cities after we leave Florida, so I'm going to need X, Y, and Z for that.
Right.
It was funny to me at spring training to look at my closet, because I had my short sleeve shirts, my polos, and then on the far left side, I had a hunting jacket. I had a couple of pullovers. I had a hooded sweatshirt. Things I would never in a million years need in Florida, but there they were for Philly and Chicago.
Hey, I met you guys in Philly. I was only on that trip for a week, and yet I had to go buy another suitcase. I had packed so many coats and V-necks and all that kind of stuff, and turtlenecks, that I was really afraid my Braves suitcase was going to bust at the seams. Yeah. I had to go get another suitcase.
That's a ringing endorsement for our suitcase company, because if we didn't have any suitcase casualties, they got it figured out.
Yeah, right.
That company. So we better to have too much than not enough. We were definitely prepared. Let's see. What will be going through your minds when you walk into Minute Maid Park for the first time since November 2nd, 2021? That's from Mike. Yeah, that'll be coming up on the next road trip. That next road trip is Miami-Houston, and that'll be the first time that any of us have stepped in that ballpark since winning the World Series. That will be cool.
I don't know about you guys. I might have a little swagger and a little hop in my step.
I think so, too. I will look out there at that AL pennant the Astros have for 2021 and really grin and enjoy that, knowing we got the big one.
Yes, sir.
I'll remember a lot of things about that night. As soon as I walk in that ballpark and as soon as I step foot in that booth and I look out on the field and probably just feel euphoria thinking about the three of us getting to take our picture with the trophy. And, you know, one of the most vivid memories I have of that night is leaving on the team bus to go back to the hotel for the celebration. And how much fun that was, and how happy all the guys were, and the things that were taking place on that bus. And I know for myself, however many times I go to that ballpark the rest of my life, it'll be a really, really good feeling and bring back some of the fondest memories of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great, great trip. And it was a great game in this regard. There was never really any doubt about it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, Jorge Soler kind of took the steam right out of people.
Yeah, he did, man. It's a great night, one of the best nights of our lives, and I just think back on just how lucky we are to be a part of a moment like that. We're all lucky in general just to be part of this game. This game has been around for over 150 years, so getting to have any role in this game at the major league level is such a tremendous thrill and blessing. But to take it to another step, even further than that, and be a part of a World Series winner and getting to tell our fans about it over the airwaves, just a tremendous, tremendous amount of gratitude and feeling of blessing just to be in that and be a part of that. And that's what I'll think about when I go into that ballpark.
I want to get to something that's very important here, and this is from Mike, who wants to know that now that C.J. Nitkowski has joined the TV booth, has anything changed as far as which booth would win in a steel cage match? This is important to us. And if you add in more than just the regulars like Darren and Kelly, they're pretty big boys, yeah. And I'm not saying we would need Darren or Kelly, but if the guys over on the radio side started trying to bring in Nick Green or Peter Moylan or whomever else they want, it's still no contest.
Yeah, I'm not just having fun with this. We would absolutely destroy that room.
I feel bad for CJ. He doesn't know what he stepped into.
He's going to hear about this and think, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
The radio guys want to have a steel cage fight? Mm-hmm. And that's just that's our mentality, you know? How big a boy are you?
Yeah, exactly right. Do I have to go?
Yeah. You know what? If we're sizing up booths, now I don't think they come close to us, but when we're in Chicago, the Rockies were also staying at our hotel. And I'll give their broadcasters credit. Those guys were in the weight room moving some weight around. I mean, Drew is in there. Drew's only, about 5'9".
Yeah, but Drew Goodman.
But he's put together, boy. He's in there throwing some weight around. So was Ryan Spielborg. So I'm thinking, you know what, for a booth, I think y'all are bringing it. I think they'd put up a pretty good fight.
Yeah, they'd be up there in the top five contenders.
Yeah, yeah. We're at the top of the mountain, Hoss, but, you know. Let's see.
Let's stay in Chicago.
Okay.
Let's stay in Chicago. This is a good one from Ed. Guaranteed Rate Field isn't a place the Braves have been to often. What did you like about your visit there, and would it be worth the Braves fans making the trip there the next time the team goes there?
I enjoyed the heck out of the visit. It was actually the first time I'd worked in that ballpark. But the people could not have been more hospitable to us, more welcoming to us. Everyone that worked in that ballpark, from who sat in the entrance lobby to the elevator attendants to their director of broadcasting to the people who worked in the food room, everyone was great. As far as where we worked, our vantage point was really good. Now, that ballpark was new in 1991, so it's over 30 years old. You don't see that too often. But it was a very nice, comfortable place to work, and if we have to go back somewhere for one game, I'm happy. I'm familiar with the ballpark, but I look forward to seeing those people again. Could not have been a more positive experience.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I know that area of Chicago, that's nobody's vacationing on the south side of Chicago by any means. But I thought the ballpark itself, for fan purposes, was perfect. I think for being in the stadium, I thought it was a really nice ballpark. I thought they've done a very nice job over the 30 years of keeping the place up and keeping it modern and having it fan-friendly. And then to echo what Jonathan said, there was a level of hospitality that was higher than the norm.
Yeah.
From everybody, top to bottom, and that was very much appreciated. So a lot of class, in my opinion, by the White Sox from what we experienced over the 3 days that we were there.
Yeah, it was great. Press room was unbelievable. They were feeding so many people in their what we call the press room. It's like a cafeteria. Great food, tons of employees that go through the line there, as well as all of the press corps. But I don't know, man. They got to be in the top two or three with Philadelphia and name another team in terms of their press.
Yeah.
Press food.
Yeah, to me, Phillies and Yankees have been the elite of the elite when it comes to the press food. In the press room, but that was way up there.
They moved right in.
Yeah. All right, this is a question from Cheryl, and I think this is a good question to bring up. The question is, Sean Murphy and Spencer Strider in the first week of the season, how much more can our depth be tested early this season? Well, to me, and this is just what we do, it doesn't matter the sport, football, baseball, basketball, we all like to make predictions. This team's going to be this. This guy's going to be that. Watch out for these guys. You can do that in baseball, but it doesn't work the same way that it does in football, in basketball, in any other sport. And I'm guilty of it, too. We like to go through and make our predictions for what the divisions are going to shake out to be. But this season is so long, and every single team, Cheryl, is going to be tested with multiple injuries. And that's why we say all year long with anything that we predict, the preface is, If you're healthy, yes, it'll be these teams should be your World Series contenders. But that's never the case. And that's why it is such a grand accomplishment to win your division, to win a World Series, because it's not just that you're the best on the field, but you went through portions of your season where you were not 100%. You didn't have your best nine out there, yet you maintained. You continued to win, even when you had to bring up a shortstop from AAA or trade for a pitcher or move a guy from the bullpen into the rotation. It's really a long war when it comes to a baseball season of next man up. And the Braves have gotten a little bit of bad luck here early on, losing Murphy and Strider. And that's how it works in Major League Baseball, and it will not be the last injury or challenging of depth that we see.
To back up what you're saying, just think about 21 losing Ronald Acuña Jr. and Alex Anthopoulos going out and getting some outfielders, a kind of a wide assortment, with getting Duvall back, getting Jock Peterson, getting Soler. Nobody knew if that was going to be the answer, but those guys were tremendous contributors to the absence of Ronald and help win it.
Mm-hmm. Because you never would guess. I mean, you're going to lose players, but there are just some players that if you lose them for long periods of time, you think you're toast. And you may be. More times than not, you lose an MVP candidate, you're probably going to be sunk for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. Didn't happen that year, though.
Well, let's use the Angels as an example of that. They've been without Rendon. They've been without Trout for extended periods of time over the last 2 or 3 years. And it's pretty much killed them.
Yeah.
I mean, they had Ohtani. He wasn't enough by himself. And when you lose key players like that, if you do not have depth, if you do not go out and try to find someone to replace those guys, you are sunk.
Mm-hmm.
Because those were two, Trout and Rendon, two of the highest paid players on their team.
Right.
So their budget's already strapped. Now you got to go get somebody else.
Yeah. When I think about winning the World Series or winning a division, it wasn't just, hey, our team was better than that team 4 times out of 7. No. Mm-hmm. For that particular moment in time, yes. But to get there, what you had to overcome injury-wise, ineffectiveness-wise, et cetera, it's just such a long war of trying to have guys who can get out there and compete even when you don't have your best nine, because more times than not, you probably won't have your best nine.
Right.
No one will. What do you got, JC?
Here's one from Grant. Spring training seems like a full-scale operation, basically moving a team from one city to another for a little less than 2 months. What all goes into that, and who are some people that we may not know that help make that happen?
Well, that's a long list, isn't it?
You go, Jonathan, because you have your thumb on that, and you know them so well.
I mean, there's a ton of guys in the clubhouse. Fred Stone, Calvin Manassian, Eric Durbin, Tony Farmer, Alan Lark, Alex LaCroix, Caleb Cargill, tons of guys, and if I'm leaving some out, I apologize, but there's so many behind-the-scenes folks that make that happen that, like you said, basically move an operation from one city to the next and have to set it up where it looks like these guys are basically coming into Truist Park when they show up to Cool Today Park in Northport, Florida. But, I mean, there's so many guys that work tirelessly all day long, sun up to sundown, that you never hear from, that you never see, that basically make every single bit of that happen. It's a huge operation. There's tons of moving trucks that go down to Florida that take a lot of stuff from Atlanta, whether it's radio or TV equipment or things that they use in the clubhouse or the weight room or uniforms or equipment or whatever it happens to be, front office stuff. And it gets set up down there. And then when it's time to come back to Atlanta, a lot of that comes back. Things that go with us on the road trip, get put on another truck, go to the airport, put on the plane, sent to the next city. It's incredible to me, even thinking about how much goes into not only spring training, but from one city to the next, getting a major league team and all the things that need to go with them from city to city throughout the course of the season, and how many people it takes to make that happen.
I couldn't agree more. I think about Pinky, too.
Jeff Pink. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah. Eric Durbin.
Yeah. Then there are things that happen, let's say, just in spring training. You mentioned Calvin Manassian. He's the equipment manager, and he kind of takes care of everything in the clubhouse, including uniforms. And then this big uniform debate came up during spring training, remember? And and he's got a he's already – having to deal with everything else that goes on with what Jonathan just described. And now he's got to deal with this and make sure that the team's going to have the right uniforms come opening day. Right. You know, it's right. like, oh, my God, what else can go wrong? Yeah. So it's not like it just you can't anticipate all the business of what we were talking about to be the same every year. There are hiccups along the way. And while they are very good at what they do, and they've been through this and done it before, my point is that other things come along sometimes to throw a wrench into it.
Mm-hmm. And then Mike Shaw and Jonathan Kerber there to organize the whole thing. I love the app that we have, and fans would know about this, but we have an app that has all our travel plans on there. All we have to do to see our bus schedule, et cetera, hotel information, whatever it may be, is go on this app, and they're constantly updating that. For instance, when the ball game was postponed in Chicago the other day, we get the notification on our app, and Mike and Kerber are down there having to punch all that up and make sure that it's that everyone is informed, getting that information out there. But to take a step back and look at the grand scheme of all this, when it comes to all that, and having it done properly, and having all the equipment there that needs to be there and all that, good enough isn't going to work. It's got to be the best. Why? Because you want to win.
Yeah.
And you're doing the best that you can to get these guys everything they need, every amenity that they need, so they can perform on the field. And that's the common goal. You want to win. And that's why all those guys are trying to do the very best they can across the board to give the players everything that they need so they can accomplish that.
I think it would honestly blow people away if they were really taken behind the curtain to see what it takes, not only in spring training but in the regular season, to get everything ready on a daily basis to where the players and the coaches and the staff show up and everything's just ready. It's yeah. ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of work from a lot of guys that go into that that would just blow your mind.
When we say something's big league, that doesn't just happen, does it?
No.
Yeah, it takes some effort and some definitely intentionality in order to make that happen. Best meal on the first road trip and where? That's from Ryan. That's a great question. See, that's a tough one because we went to two really good food cities, culinary gyms in Chicago and Philadelphia. So I might lean towards Saloon.
Really?
Yeah, I loved Saloon.
Well,
the food was good, and so was everything else.
Yeah. Well, it's just the atmosphere is so good, and always has been.
Yep.
But I was going to say Butcher and Singer.
Butcher and Singer put me in a world of pain.
It was tremendous.
That place was a big league.
I didn't know anything about it, so I was blown away.
Four come to mind.
That place we went to in Chicago is good.
Butcher and Singer, top notch. I really enjoyed the Saloon. Anytime Joe wants to take us to a place that he used to go to with Skip and Pete and Don and Ernie and all the people that came before us is really cool. Even before we get there, just to think about how many nights all you guys spent at some of these places in these cities that we go to. But, yeah, Butcher and Singer, top notch. The Saloon, I had the Pappardelle Bolognese there. Really, really good. It was a cool spot. Rosebuds on Rush in Chicago. But then got up extra early the last day that we were there when the game was postponed. And you and I went to a breakfast spot next to the hotel that we stay in Chicago. And, man, ate about everything.
Yeah, that was good.
Ate about everything, but, yeah.
I just know that after we went to Butcher and Singer, none of us ate much the next day.
No,
I didn't eat till dinner the next night.
Yeah. I had an Uncrustable the whole day. And then I went to the Saloon. I couldn't decide between the veal and the rump roast.
Yeah, exactly. With you.
Yeah. Let's see here. How long does it take to for you to all feel like you've settled into your routine of a new season? That's from Kevin. Probably not too terribly long. I mean, once you get going again, it all kind of comes back, doesn't it?
I can speak for myself and say I got to get through a road trip and I got to get through a homestand. As crazy as this sounds for me and what I do, it's not the worst thing to start on the road. I would love to open in front of our own fans, but it's a little bit easier to settle in without the hustle and bustle of everything that goes into the home opener. We see so many more people maybe the first week in the first homestand that we normally don't see on a daily basis, and it's just hectic. It's chaos. There's a lot going on. So to answer that question in a long-winded way, I got to get through a road trip and at least a homestand before I feel like, okay, I'm into a routine. Then the other thing that kind of throws you for a loop, spring training, you play all day games with the exception of one or two. The first week of the season, we were all day games with the exception of one. So to get back into the routine to where, you know, maybe you're not waking up at 6 or 6:30 in the morning and you're playing night games, I welcome that, brother.
Yeah, I love the night games. After 6 weeks of day games.
Yeah, I agree. With respect to what we were talking about with travel and all that goes into it, the logistics and everything, this is from Brad. When it comes to team travel, are you guys included in any team functions? My initial answer, Brad, would be no. Not that we wouldn't participate. We just don't get invited, with the exception of the front office is really good to us in inviting us to, like, dinners to start the season or midway through the season. If there are some executives on the road, they always include us in dinners and welcome us with open arms, and we love those dinners and are excited for when they come along. So with exception of that, not really, not much else.
Kind of broken down into, you know, players do player things and broadcasters do broadcaster things, and then you got the staff and all that. Everybody kind of divides up.
Didn't used to be that way.
Really?
It didn't used to be that way. No. Used to be that if there was a crowd going to dinner, it might be a mixture of everybody.
I see.
There was never any sequestering of any one group away from another. And it just changed. It's just different.
Stan, I can't read your question, but absolutely. That's a mega yes for me.
Yep. Yep. And I was there to watch.
Oh, man. Let's see.
For me also, Stan.
Way to go, JC. Let's see. The bullpen has been pretty solid through the first week. Is this about what you expected out of that group, and who's the leader down there? Leader probably comes with seniority, man. You think about Jesse and AJ and Matzik.
Yeah. And I would say Rysell, too, to some extent, if he wants to be. Rysell seems to be such a happy spirit, you know, always a smile on his face. I don't know that he's like a boss down there by any means. But, yeah, I think we've got several veterans that can contribute to that. And that's one of the reasons I'm thrilled to have Jesse Chavez back.
Yeah, I think about those roles. And I don't know that you would circle one guy and say, here's the alpha leader of the bullpen. Because those guys are all that by nature, if you ask me. But I love having Tyler Matzik back because I think he has an edge to him that is exceedingly sharper than most guys. We all know what he did in 2021, but it's not just that moment. Tyler's just, he's a dude, man.
Yeah.
He's going to get out there, and he wants to get the job done, and he's going to be the kind of guy who leads and fires other guys up along the way. So just having him back in the bullpen before he even throws a pitch, I think it's great just to have that personality back in the bullpen.
I agree. And remember last year when he was still rehabbing, he's in the dugout. He's on the rail cheering the guys on and yelling at umpires and everything else, trying to – who was it? Was it Pete Alonso that said throw it again, remember?
Yeah, Bryce Elder.
And then the next time we saw Pete Alonso, I think Matzik was on his case.
Yeah.
Remember that?
All over him.
Yeah, that's he is a dude.
I think for vocal leaders, to me, this is just my guess, I think Tyler and Jesse would probably be the most vocal leaders of your bullpen, of this bullpen.
Yeah. There's a couple of quick ones from Angela. Are you guys going to go any easier on J-Chad this season? No.
We're going to go harder, Angela.
It's already started.
We're going to stick it to him.
He's going to either have to suck it up or, you know, go cry somewhere in a corner. That's all there is to it.
My boy. What do you got, JC?
Here's one from Jake. I've always wondered this. How come radio does every spring training game and TV only does a few? I assume it's just because you guys are tougher than they are.
Yeah, and they're just a bunch of weenies. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. I mean, look, if the Braves are on the field, Braves radio is going to be there.
Yeah, right.
That's just the way that it is.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of sucking it up, we do. We get down there and get after it.
We do, man. And it's I'll say this. It is a point of pride to know that we bring fans those games. I don't think any other team brings their fans every single spring training game. Does it get challenging? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially for our producer here. I mean, he's driving all over the state of Florida. He's at every game. You and I get some days off.
Yeah.
I think of the 31 games we did, I think I did 24, 25 of them, whatever it may be. But it is a massive undertaking to put every single spring training game on, but it's something that we're glad that we can say that we get to do for our fans.
Right.
Here's a really good question. This is one I've not thought too much about. This is from Sheldon. And Sheldon says, you guys do a great job. My question is about the Braves Hall of Fame. Why do you think Bob Horner is not in? And who are some players that you guys think should be in? We certainly have a lot of current guys on this team who appear headed for the Braves Hall of Fame at the least. Sheldon, that's a really good question, and I can't even pretend to know. I mean, you think about some of the greatest Braves in the history of this organization, and most of them are in there, but you think of certain eras where here was the guy for this era, and there was a time where Bob Horner was that guy for the Braves.
Yeah, and that is such a great question, Sheldon, that we actually, when we were kind of previewing some of these questions, we looked at each other, and it was like we were all surprised when we talked about it that he's not in it, and I know that he's not in it, and he should be. Bob Horner, my goodness, should be in the Braves Hall of Fame and hopefully will be soon. I've got some other nominees, and they may not all be players. Bill Akrey, who was that traveling secretary and equipment manager and groundskeeper when he first started on the grounds crew. Bill Akrey spent 50-plus years in this organization. Mm. Bill Akrey should be in the Braves Hall of Fame. And I would be an advocate for him from right now, before now, but
yeah.
He should be in. But there are other players. John Holland, hopefully someday will be in the Braves Hall of Fame. Jeff Porter.
Is Doozy in? Bobby Doos?
No. Jeff Porter, trainer forever for this ball club, should be.
Mm-hmm. Fred Stone, almost 50 years?
Yeah, there you go. Sometimes we were talking about this a little bit in Chicago, I think, about Baseball Hall of Fame. And I know it's player-centric, but there are people like Walter Banks, Bob Shepard that I mentioned, Nancy Faust, the organist at Old Comiskey Park. There are people who have made contributions to the game that are noteworthy that should be under consideration for Baseball Hall of Fame too.
Baseball is so unique in that regard because we do it every day. So therefore, there are people around every single day. This isn't once a week. This isn't twice a week like you might have in other sports where it's every single day and those contributors get an opportunity to contribute every day, year after year, decade after decade. And I agree with you. You don't have to be in uniform to really impact a franchise and a community and a city for a fan base. And that's a really good list right there.
Yeah, that's just a start. And even the people I was listing for the Braves Hall of Fame, there are a lot of people behind the scenes who should get some consideration for that. But Bob Horner, my goodness, 100% he ought to be in.
Yeah.
I'd be a big advocate for some of those behind-the-scenes people that you mentioned, and I'm sure there are others because – you know, talk about the time, the energy, the effort. They've basically given their life a lot for 50-plus years. My goodness, talk about, I mean, a huge accomplishment, achievement, and I think they should be recognized.
That was a great question, Sheldon. We thank you for bringing it to our attention.
This question comes from Zach in Smyrna, Tennessee. Hey, guys, so glad it's baseball season again. With the opening day postponement, and the blustery weather on the regular schedule and the rescheduled date, it got me thinking, why do the Braves seem to open up north so many times? Since opening of Truist Park in 2017, the Braves have only hosted opening day twice, but have opened the season in Philadelphia three times, New York twice, and Washington once. It makes no sense to me that Major League Baseball wouldn't favor southern teams and teams with roofs for opening day. Now, Zach, we answered some of that earlier in the show, but I do want to bring up this point. I'll read this question for this point. I don't know if this is still the case, but there was a time where I felt like the Braves requested to start on the road each season because of the Masters.
Right.
And now we're starting the season earlier than we used to, but there used to be a time where we might be starting April the 10th, and they didn't want to have
the conflict,
opening day conflict with the Masters going on.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. The other thing is, too, I don't know how this works. I'm not in their room. I don't know how they pick and choose. But the Braves like being home for July 4th. We've been very fortunate that way to have big fireworks and everything on July 4th here in Atlanta. So I don't know if you're able to kind of, you know, hey, we'd like July 4th. We don't care where we open. Or
sure.
in a little negotiation there to try to get your way on certain dates. I don't know.
Because you're going
to
get your home opener, whether it's the very first day of the season or the 6th or whatever.
Right.
That'd be a good trade-off.
I got one here from Ernie in Abingdon, Virginia. Ernie wants to know, he said, I was reading Jason Stark's article. Jason is in Philadelphia and a national writer and a really good one and a good guy. He was writing in The Athletic about improving the pace of games by limiting TV commercial interruptions, hallelujah, and instead of having more split screen or banner ads that run during the action. In addition, he mentioned further limiting the time that teams have to start a challenge, but personally I'd like quicker calls from the replay booth. What do you all think? Would the change in TV timeouts affect radio ad schedules? Seems like you all have always included in-game ads. Thanks, Ernie.
Boy, do we.
Good question. Yeah, we do. Got to pay the bills, got to keep the lights on, all those things. One thing golf does, they call it playing through, and they have a split screen. You get to see the action continue on the golf course, wherever it is, and they run an ad, and it's got audio, so you can hear what the ad is. Do I like it? Not really. But that's one way that you could do it, by continuing to play and shorten the time between between innings.
Yeah, you could do that. That's come such a long way. It's been an evolution. And I think we've talked about this before. And some old-timers out there will certainly remember this. There was a game I found on YouTube. There was no video, all audio. This is from the early 50s. It was a Brooklyn Dodger game, and Red Barber's doing the play-by-play. And there were no commercial breaks. When it came to the commercials, whomever was not calling play-by-play had readers. And they read for one company. And it was Post Sugar Crisp cereal. And they are just beating you over the head with Post Sugar Crisp. Hmm. And that's all it was. So the play-by-play guy, and I think in this case it was Connie Desmond and Red Barber. And I think in Red's innings, he's calling the play-by-play. And when they had the half-inning break, Connie Desmond chimes in with all these messages for Post Sugar Crisp, and then it's right back to the play-by-play action. And then when it was Connie Desmond's innings, they flip-flopped. But they never took a break away from the broadcast. When they paused for station identification, they had they read the whole thing right there, whomever the other guy was. So they never stepped away from the microphone. And I found that fascinating, that commercial breaks – weren't always just a thing in radio. And I understand this is 70 years ago, but I think about what we do now and multiple reads, whether it be commercial breaks or what we do in-game for dozens and dozens of companies, and how that's come such a long way.
And if you listen to any other broadcasts, you're in your car and or Sirius XM, whatever, and they bring another radio broadcast, just notice how many more of those in-game readers they're doing than we do. We have all we can handle. We have all that we want, and they keep kind of adding, piling it on us. However, there are some teams, I'm not kidding, I'm not exaggerating, foul ball off to the left side. That foul ball brought to you by...
It's like you're reading the Yellow Pages.
Yeah, that pitch in the dirt brought to you by Tide Detergent. It'll get the dirt out of that baseball. It just went in the dirt. I mean, it's ridiculous what some teams have done and what kind of an onus they've put on their broadcasters to try to get all that nonsense in.
Mm, yeah, good point. Well, we got a bunch of readers, that's for sure, and happy to have all those companies with us.
Not to completely change gears here, but here's a question from Deborah, and she says this question's for Joe. Are you going to Miami? If so, how much beach time will you get? Wink, wink.
Deborah, are you going to be down there?
Get that speedo ready?
That beach time might be affected, you know. I'll probably take two. Probably take two speedos.
Two speedos?
Yeah.
You got to tan the cheeks, man.
Yeah, one for the first day or two, you know, where you're trying to not overdo it. And then by the last day, you kind of...
The aggressive pair.
That would be a good description. That would be a great description.
Oh, well, good thing we don't have an off day down there. Then you get really aggressive.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Here's one from Alan. Who is one coach you enjoy seeing away from the field, maybe in a hotel lobby or at a restaurant?
Hard to say just one.
First guy that comes to my mind is Eddie Perez.
Yeah, Eddie's got to be
sure.
On. He's towards
just because, I mean,
list.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, and got another huge hand yesterday when he was announced on the line.
Yeah.
Most handsome man in baseball.
Definitely one of the funniest guys you'll be around.
Absolutely.
Great sense of humor.
He gets on the bus in Philadelphia, and he had his daughter and her fiance, I think, on the bus with him. And he looked back there at us. Of course, we're sitting in the back of the bus. And he starts doing the chop, but he's going, "Hey, how are you? Hey, how are you? Hey, how are you?"
Oh, man, it's a good crew. Yeah. I like talking cigars with Rick. I mean, that guy goes through more cigars than anybody I've ever seen.
Yeah, Walt, I mean, yeah, Walt's done everything in this game as a player, as a manager.
And he's remembered it all. Uh-huh. I feel like he's always got a story, always has some kind of, yeah, this happened to us in so-and-so year. I saw a guy do this. And it's great to be around Walt and just not say anything, just listen to him talk.
Speaking of Walt, there was a question here, and now with these four pages, I'll never find it, but you guys might have your eye on it from a fan who wanted
I see it right here.
About making a great play. No, they wanted to know.
It said, this is from Art. It says, how much have you guys gotten a chance to meet the new base coaches yet? And what can you say about the job Walt Weiss has done? Is that not it?
That's not it, but we'll answer it. And we know the coaches. Matt Tuiasosopo was up here for a little bit last year when Ron Washington was away, when he was inducted into a Hall of Fame down in New Orleans. I didn't know Goodwin, Tom Goodwin, but he was a terrific player and a welcome addition. He's got a great personality about him, always happy to see you, shaking your hand and everything. So I've enjoyed talking to him. So all of that's good.
I think I found the question you're talking about.
Okay.
From Jared in Reno. If you guys were able to play in the majors, or for Joe, again in the majors, what position would you most like to play and why? Is that the one you're looking for?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And he goes on to say, in that vein, what's your favorite defensive play by a Braves player or all-time Major League Baseball that you have seen? So glad you guys are back. That's from Jared.
There was a play in the playoffs at the Astrodome. You guys have seen it. Astros have the bases loaded, less than two outs, infield's in, and we were in deep, dark danger, the Braves. And whoever the hitter was bounced one off that turf up the middle, and quick reactions by Walt, who was playing shortstop, dives to his left, spears it to keep it from getting into center field, jumped up, threw home to Eddie Perez, who kept his foot on the base on home plate, much like a first baseman would with a stretch, and they got a force out at home. That didn't end the inning. It saved the inning and ultimately saved the game. One of the best plays I've ever seen in the postseason.
Yeah. I remember watching that live. And he had that glove that it looked like it was 100 years old.
Yeah, it looked like a pancake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go to the play that ended game two here last year in the division series, the
Michael
double
Harris.
Play where Michael Harris throws back. It was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute chaos. You've seen guys doubled off after great defensive plays, but that just – the way the ball trickled across the infield and Austin came out of nowhere
right.
and made the play, that's way up there for me. I think anybody will mention the Oakland-New York play from the postseason with the Jeter play, or was it Indy Chavez that had the play at the fence?
That's up there with
me.
They
doubled off the runner at first base. But as far as ones that I've been a part of and caught, that one to end game two last year is way up there.
If I were to play a position in the major leagues, I'd want to play shortstop. And the best or my favorite defensive play I've seen by a Braves player or all time this may be the easy way out, but it's how I feel. The ground ball to Dansby in the World Series.
Sure.
All right, here's a question for Jonathan. Wilson here, question for everyone. Who is Jay Chad's favorite girl on Below Deck, and what version does he like the best? Below Deck Mediterranean, Sailing Yacht, etc. Go Braves.
Below Deck Med all day. I do like Captain Glenn on Below Deck Sailing Yacht and kind of how he runs a tight ship. Got a pretty good crew in the latest season. But I liked Captain Lee, big Captain Lee fan. He's now since retired, and you got Captain Sandy and the newer guy that took over. His name escapes me at the
Captain
moment.
Captain Hook?
Maybe Captain Jason, I want to say. But definitely I would say Below Deck Med's a favorite. As far as, let's see, what did it say?
Favorite girl.
Favorite girl? I mean, you're going to have to give me a week. I'll answer that next week. There's so many to choose from. A ton of really good-looking stewardesses. And, you know, I want to make sure my wife's not listening to this, and then I can answer that next week. But
Hold on. The show that you would watch at spring training where the people are there in a house together and they live in New York City.
No, that's not. We can talk about that another episode.
But my question is, do you prefer Below Deck or that show? Because you would watch that show two or three times at spring training.
I like them both.
What's the name of that show?
We can talk about that.
Yeah, I learned a lot about trash television. J-Chat's hooked, man.
Well, you know what happens, though, is for 4 months, you know, you're not at a ballpark. You know, you're watching some TV with your wife at night, and you happen to stumble upon a few shows that she wants to watch, and, you know, after 7-8 weeks watching it, you want to know what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what he would do is so this TV, the show would come on, and I know nothing about this show. And he'd say, like, oh, this couple, they're crazy. They're going to fight the whole time. Then another girl's like, wait till you see this girl. You're going to love her. Yeah. And then I'd wait to see, you know, this girl he's talking about. So he's giving me this preview of all the different characters on the show. So after 15 minutes, I felt like I knew just about all there was to know, which wasn't much. Yeah. But I learned a lot about these shows and found out a little bit more about this. The show we watched is like these people live in New York, and then they go to this beach house and hang out for a while.
Sounds like maybe he had an old girlfriend on there or something.
Oh, he might have.
The show's called Summer House, all right?
Summer House. Okay. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah. I think Jonathan wants us to wrap this
up.
Yeah,
that's enough for this week.
You'll have plenty of punishment in form of your emails next week. Well, we appreciate you being out there as always. It's great to be back with you. Again, this is our first episode of the new season, and we're going to have a lot of fun this summer for sure. So that is episode number 49. Again, our email address, bravesbooth@gmail.com. Until next time, for Jonathan and for Joe, I'm Ben. And this is From the Braves Booth.